Hello, and welcome to Plant Powered Buddhist Podcast, where we are learning to turn our eating habits into a spiritual practice. I'm Sensei. I want to welcome you from wherever you're listening in the world. I also want to say a heartfelt thank you to all of my followers, my supporters, my clients, and my students. Without your support, I simply couldn't do what I do. I'm excited about today's episode, so with no further ado, let us begin. And welcome. This is the first episode of season two, and we are going right for the jugular, so to speak. Today, I'm going to share with you how I beat my food addiction. First, let me say a few words about addiction, mainly that it involves some area of the brain in the same way that really drug addiction does. Unhealthy foods have an effect, a powerful effect, on the center of the brain that causes the sensation of reward and joy. So this is caused by neurotransmitters like dopamine. So that's about as far as I'm going to go in terms of science, because that's not what my podcast is about. And quite frankly, the science and the medical kind of view on nutrition is not what allowed me to beat food addiction. So some of the signs that one has an addiction is frequent cravings of that particular thing, overuse of that, in this case, overeating, and unsuccessfully trying to quit that thing. In the case of food addiction, it may be trying to diet, all these types of fad diets, or trying to eat less of a particular food that you believe is not healthy for you and not being able to do that. Well, I can tell you that for myself, none of these really played a role for me, except for perhaps frequent cravings and also overeating, which was just, you know, part of growing up in American culture. It's you eat to get full. You don't eat to satiate your hunger. Now, here's the interesting thing in my own story, and that is I am someone who, even when I was still a meat and dairy consumer, was absolutely certain that I was not addicted to that. Absolutely 100%. I said, look, I know what addiction looks like. People have addiction of various sorts, drugs, sex, porn, alcohol, all these things. And I'm definitely not like any of those people. And yet, as I began this journey, I found that, in fact, society, culture supported me in such a way, that is, in my eating habits, that it was normalized. So pretty much I said to myself, well, if I have an addiction, everybody else in the world, quote unquote, has an addiction. And we all have the same one, so it's not a big deal. So I want to give you some examples of what I'm saying, because sometimes when people hear a person speak, like myself, who's 100% plant-based, no meat, no fish, no dairy whatsoever under any circumstances, they tend to think like, oh, you know, that person is either exceptional in some way, loony in some way. You know, in other words, they otherize you so that whatever you say, it's like, well, that's a fringe opinion. That's a fringe lifestyle. I'm not interested. So I want to share with you, when I say addicted, just to let you know that I was among the most ardent of meat lovers and dairy lovers. So let me give you a couple of examples. One example is that I used to go to this burger place that I really liked, and they had a menu where things were listed on the menu, but there were things that you could order that were not on the menu. You know, many places do this type of thing. And one of the things that I used to order that was not on the menu was what was called a 4x4. And the 4x4 burger was 4 patties, cheese on each of them, on one bun. Did you hear what I just said? 4 patties. And I don't mean small ones. 4 patties, 4 slices of cheese, all the trimmings. I would order that, order fries, and also a milkshake. And I would eat that, thought it was just one of the most wonderful things that you could have. And I tell you, even as I'm mentioning this to you, my stomach turns. It's almost like unbelievable to me, inconceivable, that I ate that with regularity. Another example, there was a pizza place that I used to like to go to, and they had something called a Meat Lovers. And this Meat Lovers pizza, which had sausage, ham, beef, basically every type of meat that you could imagine on it, hence the name Meat Lovers, plus all the cheese and dairy and everything else stacked on it. So on several occasions, I, along with one of my friends, went to this place, would order a large Meat Lovers pizza, split a small size Meat Lovers pizza, and drink a large pitcher of root beer. Again, just so you can understand what I'm saying, I would eat a large pizza, half of a small pizza, and drink a pitcher of root beer myself. Another example, I remember when I was in college, I got into this weird habit. I don't even know how it started or why it started. But in the mornings, I would have around 10 o'clock or so before class, a soda and a chocolate brownie. Soda and a chocolate brownie. And I would do that like 3 or 4 days a week. And one day, I went to the vending machine, got my soda, got the chocolate brownie, popped open the soda, was walking to class, sat down at my desk, and I took a bite of the brownie and took a sip of the soda, and my stomach kind of made a weird, had a weird sensation. So I thought, that's kind of weird. Anyway, 5 minutes, class was going to be starting. I knew I had to guzzle this down before class started. So I take another sip, and on that second sip, I can only describe the feeling of fire lighting up my whole stomach. I mean, it was as though my whole stomach was just on fire. And I literally grabbed my backpack. I had the brownie and soda in my hand. I think I might have dropped it on the way running to the bathroom. And I was running to the bathroom, not because I needed to use the bathroom, but because I thought I was dying. That's what it felt like. It literally felt like my whole abdomen was on fire. And so I made it into the bathroom, and I was doubled over by the sink. I just had my head on the sink, just going like, what in the world is happening to me? You know, a couple of people were walking in and out looking like, you know, what's wrong with this guy? Maybe they just thought I was hungover or something like that. But it got so bad that I put my backpack on the ground and I just sat on my backpack with my back against the wall and my face in my hands. And I was just like, I don't understand what's happening to me. So this went on for about a good 5 to 10 minutes and then started to slowly but surely subside. And so I went back to class and needless to say, I was still shaken up and that wasn't a good experience. So I thought to myself, you know, maybe it was something in the brownie or maybe something in the soda. So I decided, well, you know, maybe I'll just take a break from that for about 2 days. So the next day, go into class, no soda, no brownie. I was like, yeah, you know, I feel fine. I'm back to normal. On the second day, I stop at the machine to get the soda and the brownie. Start walking to class. Before I get to class this time, I take a sip of the soda. Boom. Stomach on fire. And I can tell you from that moment to this, I gave up soda. So I have many stories which I can share with you. Breakfast for me was something where, you know, half of 6 pieces of bacon, four eggs, toast, and, you know, jelly and the whole nine. And of course, a huge tumbler of milk, cow milk. Now, I was able to eat these things, so I thought, and be fine, so I thought, because I was so active. So I'm a martial artist, and, you know, and at that time I was training really hard, participating in tournaments. You know, I was a person who was just always active. And that's something that I maintain, at least the practice of martial arts. And so because it didn't show, like I didn't look fat or unhealthy or anything like that, and I'm fairly tall, so I can carry more weight than maybe some other people might be able to. But the point is it wasn't showing up yet physically, but internally, something was definitely happening. I'll give you one last example. Holidays, that's a time where overeating, eating, you know, as much as you can is actually encouraged. So I can think about backyard barbecues where, you know, you have ribs, hot dogs, hamburgers, steak, all in the same day, and lots of it. Then, of course, you add in the potato salad that's loaded with, you know, all kind of dairy, eggs, and mayonnaise and all that. You know the drill. And so I share this with you as someone who understands that the addiction, and that's what it is. And this is why I'm sharing it with you. Because I've never had an addiction to drugs or anything else, nothing. And I always just felt sorry for people and thought like, wow, that must really be something to be under that weight of addiction. But as I started to think about addiction more and more and just look into it as a phenomena, I started to say, some of these things that people are saying are things that I say about eating meat and dairy. For example, I could stop if I want to, but I don't want to. I don't need this. I just like it. Does this sound familiar? Well, if this was such a problem, then why hasn't X happened to me yet? Why haven't I suffered this? Why hasn't this happened? Why hasn't that happened? It's an interesting way of looking at things. But let's move on to what was the catalyst for me going fully plant-based. And as I said, it wasn't because of the medical establishment or anything like that. My catalyst for going plant-based had to do with spiritual development. So my entire life since I was a teenager, I had told myself, or whatever else I may be doing in life, my spiritual development is the number one reason why I am present in this world. And I will do anything and everything that I believe that is conducive to deepening my consciousness, whatever it may be, so long as I'm not harming myself or others. And so as a commitment to that, as part of a commitment to that, I started to say, is there any connection between what we eat and our spiritual development? No one planted that idea in my mind. I didn't hear it from anyone. It just came up organically, consistent with this desire to purify my body and purify my mind. And of course, having grown up in the Christian tradition, there wasn't any talk of that, about what you eat and your spiritual life. Not that I can recall. And in fact, what I do recall is, you know, having wonderful sermons and services, and then right after you go and eat a bunch of pork chops and fried chicken and, you know, all kind of other stuff. So it was a spiritual catalyst that propelled me into looking into this much more deeply. And as I began to do that, it was a whole new world opening up for me. I learned that in Eastern traditions, they had a whole history, spiritual sciences behind what you eat and your spiritual development. Amazingly deep traditions going back thousands of years, drawing some parallels between spiritual development and what we consume every day. So there was a book that I did read that after reading that book, which I read it, it's a really small book. I think I read it in one day because I was so glued to it. Small book, and it was about eating pork. And it was making the argument why people shouldn't eat pork. And as I was reading this book, I was mortified. I was absolutely mortified by what I was reading because, as I mentioned, I was someone who was eating pork like it was, you know, not going to be available tomorrow. So as I'm reading this and I'm learning about trichomoniasis and I'm learning about parasites and things that are not cooked out of the skin and the meat, even though it may be, you know, fried, boiled, barbecued, whatever. And at that moment, I remember I was upstairs in my room reading. I went downstairs and my mother was preparing dinner. And I walked up to her, and it was funny. It must have just been divine intervention. She happened to be making pork chops, mashed potatoes and gravy, rice, and some vegetables, right? And I said to her, I said, "Mom, I'm not eating pork anymore." And she looked up and she said, "Oh, really? Why is that?" And I began to explain to her this book that I had just read and that, like, basically starting right now. So I was at dinner time for the first time. I sat down and basically I only ate the sides. Did not touch the pork chop. And there were plenty of them there for us, and I just couldn't do it. So for me, that deeper understanding about what was actually at play was essential for me making a shift. But it wasn't enough for me to make me stop everything else. That is, I was still eating beef, I was still eating dairy, I was still eating chicken, I was turkey, fish, all these other things, right? But as I began to dig deeper, I started looking into the lives of various prophets across traditions. I started looking at particular philosophers, Pythagoras, and how he had a community of vegetarians. And what I began to see is that there was some interesting connection between what we consume and what we don't consume, and our energetic kind of expression. And I became intrigued by that. And I did begin to also see, obviously, some of the physical benefits of changing the diet. But my process, and this is the second part I want to share with you, was prolonged. Meaning, it was not until about, maybe 6 years ago, 6 or 7 years ago, that I became fully plant-based. Up until that point, I had gone through these stages where every couple of years, I was letting things go. So first was the pork. I let go of beef, stopped eating lamb, stopped eating basically everything that I had grown up in my life eating. But from the age of 20, when I first gave up eating pork, I basically just kept letting things go. And then I had a couple of years where I spent as a pescatarian, meaning that the only meat that I ate was fish, but still eating dairy. And 6 months after that, vegetarian. And finally, I realized, I'm just wasting time. And wasting time meaning that I was holding on mentally to eggs and cheese. So I can tell you the most difficult things for me to give up were eggs, cheese, and chicken. Those three were extremely difficult. And if I had to give those up first, gosh, I don't think I could have done it, which is probably why I didn't do it. But as I was evolving and I was experiencing this change in myself, that really it's not the type of change that you can explain or articulate. It has to be directly experienced. It's like you can talk about having kids, you can read about having kids, but unless you actually have kids, you really don't know what that's like. And that's true of many things, and this is one of them. So if you're someone who's listening now and saying, yeah, but, and all these excuses are coming up, all these mental blockages coming up, I'm telling you that you can have an experience day to day, moment to moment, that is spiritually beyond what you are experiencing now, in such a way that you'll wish, as I did, that I had done this long ago. So I want you to know that all of the objections will come up, and I'm going to address those in another episode. But I've narrowed down the four main objections that keep you addicted to meat and dairy. And it is habit, taste buds, culture, and tradition. That's it. And if you notice, those four things, you would think have nothing to do with addiction. And I'm telling you what I discovered is that addiction was shrouded. It was hidden in these things because they're so socially accepted, right? Barbecue, backyard barbecue. Of course, we're eating meat and having dairy and doing this, that, and the other. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We're having, some form of meat and dairy with each meal. It's not a meal without meat, right? This is your mindset. This is your conditioning. This is your addiction. And I'm using that word addiction because it is. So what I'm going to be doing And why I'm sharing this with you is to connect with you, to let you know that I'm someone who probably at a minimum ate as much meat and dairy as you did, and probably more. Growing up in America, you know, meat and dairy is like breathing air. And so the thought of not eating either, or that you could not only survive but thrive, because I'm not interested in you surviving spiritually, I want you to thrive spiritually. Thrive without meat and dairy might be something that seems so far-fetched to you. But you won't be the first one. And so I want to help you with that. And part of that is I just wanted to share a little bit of this background about myself. And I'll have more to say as I'm going on and sharing more with you. But I wanted to, in this episode, just to let you know that I understand cravings. And I was able to even say when I wasn't able to fully change over, or before I even consider giving up beef, I was like, I'm trapped. I admitted that to myself. So unlike many people, maybe you're one of these people, it's like, oh, I could do it if I wanted to, but I don't, you know, my doctor told me that this is healthy for me and I need protein and all these, you know, negative, you know, nonsense, basically. You can't survive without eating meat. Come on, please. This is 2022, not 202. Okay? So I want you first, your first step here in making your plant-based eating journey a spiritual practice is to sit and be honest with yourself. And if you're saying these things, oh, I could do it if I wanted to, if it was that bad, you know, my doctor would have told me so, or I know so-and-so lived to be, you know, 100 and they ate a steak every day. Look, if that's the level of vibration that you are interested in, if you're not interested in transcending phantom beliefs, then you can continue with that. But if you are still listening and you're interested in going to another level in your life, because I can tell you, if you conquer this, you can conquer anything. There is not a single thing that you won't be able to accomplish, to transcend, just by spiritualizing what and how we eat. So I thank you, and I want you to reflect on this. If you are listening and want more information, please reach out. I'm here to assist you. This is what I'm here for. I want you to spiritualize your eating habits. And the first step of that is going 100% plant-based. Until next time, peace and blessings.